I'm Victor the Voice Furman, and you're listening to the DTM Wicked Radio Network. I'm Victor the Voice Furman.
I'm the Romance Reverend Lori Sue Brockway.
Welcome to Love and Romance Radio on the DTM Wicked Radio Network.
I'm the Romance Reverend Lori Sue Brockway.
And I'm Victor the Voice Furman.
And we are Love and Romance Radio.
Clutter. We all have to deal with it. But how does clutter impact your love life? Dr. Susan Bartel was involved with a recently released study that set out to explore the extent of Americans' clutter and how it affects relationships and our health. She's a nationally recognized psychologist, consultant, and multi-award-winning author based in suburban New York. She lectures nationally on a broad range of topics, including stress, communication, life balance, and healthy lifestyle. You can also regularly find Dr. Bartel providing expert advice on CBS, ABC, Fox, and CNN. She's the author of 7 books, including Dr. Susan's Fit and Fun Family Action Plan, 301 Things You Can Do Today, Dr. Susan's Kid-Only Weight Loss Guide, The Parents' Action Plan for Success, Step Living for Teens, and Mommy or Daddy, Whose Side Am I On? You can visit Dr. Bartel at You can visit Dr. Bartel at drsusanbartel.com. Please welcome Dr. Susan Bartel. Good afternoon, Dr. Susan.
Hello. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Well, we're so happy to have you, Dr. Susan, because clutter is one of those topics that everyone is concerned about these days. And especially in a relationship, I think we can get into some trouble when we have two different kind of personalities. So when it comes to clutter in a shared home, is it a male-female thing, a Felix Unger, Oscar Madison thing, or is it a savers and a purgers thing?
Well, it's definitely a saver and a purgers thing. And I don't think that it really falls along the lines of male and female, although if I had to take a sort of educated clinical guess, I would say that it's probably women who tend to be more wanting things to be neat and clean and purger-like, and men who tend to save more. But again, I have seen many, many couples that I've worked with where it's the opposite. So, yeah.
Well, here's one couple where we're sort of in the middle between the two. We're kind of a saver, a purger, and an I don't care, but that's our relationship. We're not here to talk about our relationship today. So can you please tell us about the recent study you were involved in on clutter and relationships and health?
Sure, absolutely. So sparefoot.com, which is a website that's similar to hotels.com for storage, did a wonderful study that looked at all aspects of clutter and storage and keeping, saving, purging, and they found a really fascinating bunch of statistics. So first of all, they found that 1 in 3 Americans, and when they looked at millennials, it was nearly half, would consider breaking up with someone if that person got rid of something that had sentimental value to them. Now just think about that.
Wow.
Let's really think about how unbelievable that is, that someone would break up if you toss their stuff.
Wow. Those millennials, they take a stand for what they want.
They are tough, those millennials. But even if we look at the general population, it's still 1 in 3 who would say, you know, they're ready to oust somebody from their home if they found out they'd thrown out something that they really loved. So it tells us right from the beginning, when we look at that statistic, that clutter and the things that we save have an enormous importance to us, and that we really need to think about how in our relationship we're going to deal with one person wanting to save things and another person wanting to get rid of them. And even more importantly, things that have value to you may not have value to me, and vice versa. So we need to look at clutter as a symbol of many other things in a relationship that aren't really about clutter, but more about valuing each other.
Huh. So it's really, it can really be about valuing your partner by valuing their stuff and understanding the importance of their stuff.
Correct. Exactly. And taking the time to understand what's important to each other. And then, of course, when we sort of take that even a step further out in the relationship, it's about understanding how that impacts everything in our relationship, because you live together in a space. When you are a couple living together, you live mm-hmm. together in a space, and then you have to constantly be negotiating what it is you're keeping, what it is you're throwing out, you know, yours, mine, and ours. It really is important not to just gloss over all of that sort of data and really make it part of what you can enrich your relationship with. I think that it's an opportunity for people when they look at what one person might see as clutter and what another person might see as important things that they want to keep, as an opportunity to enrich their relationship and really move to the next level of communication in their relationship. And people don't look at it like that. I think often they start fighting with each other and arguing about the clutter itself rather than seeing it as symbolic, which is, I think, what it really is.
Well, let's talk a little bit about clutter, because, you know, some psychologists may say that clutter is also a way that people keep themselves protected or distance intimacy. It could be a defense mechanism or device. Do you see that in your practice, that some people clutter because they just don't, they can't really get completely intimate, or that they clutter because they want to create some kind of distance or gap between themselves and their partner?
I think that's a really interesting observation, and I think that there are definitely cases when that happens. I think in those situations, you're really talking about an enormous amount of clutter, probably bordering on hoarding, for example. Those people are definitely building a wall of clutter to keep them separated not only from their partner, but often from the world in general. Sometimes, though, it's not that much clutter. Sometimes it's just a little bit. For example, maybe you have 3 or 4 weeks worth of magazines that are in a corner next to your bed. Or maybe you have a couple of piles of clothing that you should be giving away, but you're not giving away because you're hoping maybe one day you'll lose the last 10 pounds and grow into those clothes again. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a lot of clutter, which I think speaks to what you're describing, where it really is walling you off from your partner. But often I don't think it's that. Often I think it's more just a difference in tolerance for keeping things. Some people like to keep every single card, you know, card that they got from somebody, birthday cards and Christmas cards and Valentine's Day cards. And those sit in a box, but there's really no space in the closet for the box, so the box sits on a shelf, that type of clutter. That's different, I think, than the clutter that's more like hoarding and very damaging to relationships.
Gotcha.
I was just going to ask, from a clinical standpoint, where do you draw the line between someone who just retains things in terms of clutter and those who are actually clinical hoarders?
I think that's hard. You know, we do see on TV the shows of hoarders, and those are extreme. That's quite unusual, actually, you know, that type of hoarding where you can't get inside someone's front door. So that's clear. And then there are the people who keep stuff. But I think that hoarding in general is probably when you're keeping so much that you don't need, where it's impeding your ability to live in your home in a comfortable way. That's probably the best way to describe it, because the rest of it is sort of a little bit subjective. What you might consider hoarding, your partner might consider comfortable. They might like to have a lot of stuff around them. So I really think that if the stuff you're keeping is interfering with you using your tables, sitting on your couches, using your bed, walking through your home, those are sort of red flags that it's really hoarding, as opposed to some people just enjoy having a lot of stuff around them.
Right. You know, I was just thinking, you know, sometimes the clutter may have a certain significance to a partner, like those love letters that get kept, or the cards, or the stuffed bear you got from your first boyfriend. You know, men or partners might see those as symbolic of hanging on to a relationship. By the same token, a wife may be upset by a guy's comic book collection from the time he was 12, thinking it's holding on to his childhood in some way, or being a kid. Do you find that at all?
Let's tease that apart for a second. The example that you give of someone holding on to love letters or jewelry even from a former boyfriend, I could understand how that type of clutter could be threatening to someone you're currently in a relationship with, particularly if that person is now your life partner, because it could make them wonder why you're holding on to a past relationship and whether the relationship you're currently in is not a good enough relationship. So, you know, that's something, if that couple was sitting on my couch, I might delve into that and say, you know, maybe it is time, if you're truly committed in a long-term relationship, to kind of purge yourself of connections to old romances. I think that that's sort of an interesting point, and perhaps that type of clutter, that's a valid reason to get rid of it, to really illustrate your commitment to your current permanent partner. Now, the other example that you give of keeping comic books from your childhood feels quite different to me. I can understand, and many people keep things from earlier times in their life. In fact, I think that that's one of the, there were really two main reasons people hold on to clutter. One, because they want to have memories, you know, strong memories of great times, beautiful, sentimental times from their past, or because they're hopeful that they will use that thing in the future. So the one example you just gave of the comic books goes to the first, where you want to hold on a little bit to your childhood. If the guy is an otherwise high-functioning, responsible adult man, living his life, he's a great partner, he's a great dad if that's the case, he holds a responsible job, but he wants to keep his comic books, I would argue that he shouldn't be required to get rid of them, and that perhaps you need to find a way to manage either where they're kept or, you know, deal with that as the partner. If the comic books truly are symbolic of someone who hasn't grown up yet, well, then, of course, we have something different to talk about. If you have a guy who's, you know, not holding a job, who spends all his time hanging out in the bars with his friends, who can't commit to the relationship, maybe then those comic books truly are symbolic of where he is emotionally. And so it speaks to more about really understanding the relationship below just that surface level of the comic books.
Now, I'm not a collector, but in terms of comic books and baseball cards and things of that nature, there are people who collect those, and those actually are very valuable.
Correct. And you would be surprised that even the very valuable ones can really irk a partner because they take up an enormous amount of living space, especially, in fact, for people who are extremely serious collectors. And sometimes, you know, that's a hard one because you don't want to, of course, get rid of someone's valuable collection. That's something that they've invested a lot of time in and that they're passionate about. But you do have to be able to understand how it might be affecting their partner. But again, sometimes we need to go a little bit below the surface because maybe that collection is not only taking up space, maybe it's taking up enormous amounts of time. And that, in fact, interestingly, might be an example of a barrier to intimacy in the relationship, not because the collection is a physical barrier, but because the time invested in it is an emotional barrier.
That's a really good point, but also the other part of that might be the financial piece, like maybe someone is spending a lot of joint income on collecting stuff and the other person gets a little annoyed at that.
Fantastic point. And yes, that's another thing that I hear often from couples that I see who have collections and who invest a lot of time in that type of clutter, let's call it, that, yeah, sometimes baseball cards, it's not only men, women as well, sometimes are collecting shoes or pocketbooks or, you know, all sorts of things, not to be sort of, I'm not being gender neutral here, but those are the types of examples that I see that people do invest a lot of money, and sometimes that in of itself is the bone of contention in the relationship. So yes, and again, that's why it's so important for us to look at the clutter as a symbol of deeper relationship issues rather than as just clutter itself.
And again, unless the couple has a joint hobby or pastime or collectible such as antiques, a lot of couples antique together. So that's, as long as that's part of a healthy relationship, then there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, that's exactly right. And in fact, I am a perfect example of the exact example you just gave with my husband. We antique together and we both collect things. He collects some things, I collect other things, some things we collect together. And so we spend a lot of time antiquing all over the country, but it's something that we have invested in our relationship. Our kids don't like it very much because they think it's all old stuff all over our house. And they've already told us they don't want to inherit any of it. They like, take your old stuff. We don't want it. But we love it. We enjoy the time we spend together antiquing, and we enjoy displaying the things. You know, I collect vintage pocketbooks, and he collects lions, different kinds of lions, and you know, various other things we collect together. But really, for us, it's been an enormous, enormous bonding experience in our relationship, because actually, I grew up in a family where collecting antiques was very much a part of my parents' life, and he didn't grow up like that. So for us, it was about me sort of bringing something to the relationship and him really embracing it in a way that was surprising to me, but so wonderful that it's really brought us together over the 25 years of our marriage.
That's wonderful. That's really great. You know, it's been said that couples mostly fight about money and child rearing. What about clutter? What kind of big battles rage on clutter?
Well, so one of the ones, so for example, Sparefoot.com study showed that over 50% of men in a relationship will have to intervene when their significant other is about to throw out something they want to keep. So you can imagine how that could become an enormous, enormous argument. You know, women are sort of constantly, again, that's sort of the sometimes how it does fall under gender, looking for things that they can throw out of their husbands. And their husband wants to hold on to it, or their partner wants to hold on to it. So those are things that I sometimes see becoming enormous fights. Sometimes what I find clutter bringing into relationship as an enormous fight is when public surfaces, the kitchen island or the dining room table, are covered with clutter belonging to one person versus the other person, and the other person is angry about it and nagging their partner to throw things out or put things away, and they don't. That can be an ongoing bickering in a relationship that I see with enormous frequency.
And there's do you think also that once people start to declutter, that it also declutters their mind a little? There's a school of thought that says the more cluttered stuff we have around us, the more messy our minds are.
Well, yes, I do think that that is the case for most people. I think, again, it's hard to, there are people who thrive without any problem amongst clutter. And, you know, again, it's because it's subjective. But certainly I think that in general, and I think the research does support it, that it's very hard to think in a clear way when you're surrounded by physical clutter. It's much easier to think clearly and declutter your mind when your environment is uncluttered. But again, there are people who become very anxious, you know, not clinically anxious, but just sort of, they don't like having their stuff thrown out. And so actually it makes them feel worse. They feel more comfortable when they have the things around them. Even if they're not sure that they need them, the idea that they might need it in the future is comforting to them. And when their partner pressures them to throw it out, it actually makes them feel more internally disorganized and cluttered. So it can go both ways. But I would say as a general rule, the less clutter there is, the easier it is for people to think clearly.
What about emotional clutter itself, rather than talking about physical objects, but emotional clutter, old hurts and pains that people hang on to?
Yes, now that's very deep clutter. And that's clearly something that really stands in the way of whether you're in a relationship or looking for a relationship or just out of a relationship. Emotional clutter is going to be an enormous barrier to you moving forward productively in your life. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Yeah.
That's why it's important. Every time I finish a book, I clean up my desk and my whole living area and start fresh, because a lot of things sort of get You've written a lot of books. You know how things get out of hand when you're very focused on something with your butt on the chair for a long time.
Yes. So, yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, for me, the experience of writing books is probably a little different than yours, because I'm generally writing a little bit here and a little bit there between my patients, between my three children, between my antiquing with my husband. I'm writing a little bit here and there. And so I don't necessarily have that feeling of needing to purge at the end. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like it's interesting that you bring that up. I sometimes feel nervous at the end to delete the book from my computer. Like I can't delete it, even though I know it's already in production at the publisher. Mm-hmm. I sometimes hold on to the finished product, all the different documents that have my chapters in them, because I'm terrified to purge myself of it. You know, it's like the fear of losing it somehow. So for me, the emotional, I actually go on the other side emotionally. I'm afraid. It took me so long to write it. It's so precious. I once, a long, long time ago, I think in my first or second book, I lost an entire chapter of a book that I hadn't backed up on my computer.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah, have you?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's probably the genesis of my being terrified to throw away. I had spent so much time in it, suddenly an entire chapter was gone. And I had to literally recreate it.
It's traumatic. It's totally traumatic. It'd be hard to recover from that.
Yes, unbelievably traumatic. But I think so, yeah. So, you know, there is this balance between keeping clutter and purging. There's something in between. I think the idea of keeping, you know, like I have people sometimes that I work with who the one partner is extremely, wants every surface to be clean and empty and you know, an extreme purger. And the other one is either a saver or just a keeper, which feels different to me than a saver. There are people who just like to keep stuff in case they might need it tomorrow, whereas there are people who are purgers who literally the second they touch it, throw it out. Sometimes what I recommend to people is that they either put it in their attic or their basement or in a storage facility. The things like a woman that I'm working with currently, for example, she has clothing, and, you know, again, we all want to lose the last 10 pounds, but this one truly is 5 pounds away from being where she wants to be, and she's been working very, very hard at it for about a year, and she has some clothing, very expensive clothing, that she doesn't want to get rid of and that she really does feel she will be able to wear again in the next 6 months, let's say. But her husband is completely upset about how much space it's taking up because they have a small New York City apartment. And it really is taking up a lot of space. So in this case, I said to her, you know what? You need to rent a storage facility for these 6 months and check in on it every once in a while and try something on and see if it's fitting you again. You know, in some cases where I feel like that's not practical, where the stuff they're going to put in storage, they'll never take out again, maybe you don't give that recommendation. But there are situations where there's an in-between ground of needing to help the couple see that you don't have to be all or none, that sometimes you have to do something that's sort of midway so that everyone can feel comfortable and happy.
I will share that when Lori Sue and I merged our lives together, we both had previous marriages and previous relationships and a lifetime of accumulation of stuff. Mine, much less than hers. But she lived in one of those New York apartments up the block from the United Nations, a studio apartment. And she had several storage facilities that we rented a truck and started going to and gathering stuff when she and I finally moved in together here in our home in Queens. And I've got to say that to her credit, we stopped. We had access to a dumpster, and she did discard a lot of stuff that she really realized she didn't need to hang on to anymore. And I think that was actually a stronger bond builder in our relationship.
Especially
some of the things I threw out. But the other thing is, you know, I've written about 20 books, and, you know, we were talking about how you don't like to let stuff go. I mean, books can live forever. So I keep the notes on every single book I've done, and usually it's at least a big, you know, box file folder.
Yeah, and on your computer.
No, not on my computer. This is like paper notes because I started writing books in 1991 before there was even the internet. So, you know, I have notes on, and also I've been a journalist for 40 years, you know, and interview famous people and you have stories. And then we used to have clips that we used to use to get more assignments. So over time, I've been really trying to release a lot of that stuff. Then I went back to school.
Wow.
And got a BA in psychology and then went to grad school. So I have all those papers and books. They're things that I don't want to let go of. So my basement is filled with them, but they're in neat boxes at the moment.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's very hard. You know, things that you also, that you invest a lot of time in, I think are hard to get rid of. I remember when I finished graduate school, it was so many years, and I had books that I knew I would never, ever open again, but I couldn't get rid of them. Or, you know, class notes. It took me probably 15 years at least of never, ever looking at them again to say to myself, now I have enough guts to get rid of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there are things that you invest so much time and energy in that become... I think it's very hard to get rid of them. That's probably part of the childhood collections or things that are so much a part of the fabric of the life that you lead today. You're afraid to just let those things go. And that's even emotional. You know, we were talking before about emotional clutter. I think some of that is emotional clutter too. You know, even though I have moved on in my career to be teaching, supervising other people, I'm still holding on to the notes that I took in my very first year of graduate school. You know, at some point I had to ask myself, really, do I need these notes anymore? Of course, the answer was no. But still, they were a memory for me of what it was like being a first-year grad student, which, you know, had goods and bads and evoked all sorts of feelings that it was hard to just kind of dislocate myself from.
Absolutely. So, and, you know, we talk to a lot of fictional authors, and Laurie Sue has written fiction also, and when you invest a lifetime in or the characters that you create and develop, when you finish the book, especially if there's not going to be a sequel, it's almost like mourning for these people that you've created in your imagination.
Yes, you know, I've heard that from fiction authors. I've always had a fantasy of being a fiction author. I just don't think I'm a good enough writer to be one. I think it takes much more skill to be a fiction writer than a nonfiction writer. But I can completely understand that. When you spend such a long, long time with your characters, it's like being in a relationship, I'm sure. And so to kind of be done with that must be very, very sad.
Yeah, and also when you open that part of your brain that's required for fiction, it's a little different than the part where we're dealing with nonfiction.
Maybe that's the part I haven't found yet.
Well, you know what? It really, honestly, I wrote it years ago, and then I went back to it, and it's taken me 4 years to really finish my first real fiction book. And that's because it was a lot of training and a lot of retraining my brain. But once you open that part of your brain, it's almost like psychotic episodes because you hear the characters speaking.
Wow.
And, you know, if you're in a psychology course, it would be, you know, something in the DSM-V, 5. But for writers, it is the, you know, you get this dialogue going, and I don't know, does it come from another part of your brain? Are there little characters in your head? It's kind of interesting what happens.
It must come from a very, very deeply creative part of your brain that not everybody has, I don't think. I think probably the same part of your brain that, say, you know, talented artists.
Right.
Creators like that. I think it comes from that part of your brain.
And you have to be willing to open the faucet. But once you open the faucet, your head could get really cluttered with their dialogue, too.
That's a different kind of clutter, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm very left-brained, very logical, but I also have learned to balance that with the right side of the brain. And I've been writing poetry since I was a kid. And I came to recognize in recent times that when I'm in that mood to write poetry and to create poetry, that I'm actually switching sides of brain. I can actually feel it in my body. I feel a transition when I write poetry, so it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And we're talking with Dr. Susan Bartel. Dr. Bartel is the author of 7 books, including Dr. Susan's Fit and Fun Family Action Plan, 301 Things You Can Do Today, Dr. Susan's Kids Only Weight Loss Guide, The Parents' Action Plan for Success, Step Living for Teens, and Mommy or Daddy, Whose Side Am I On? Dr. Susan, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and your work.
they can get my books online anywhere and in stores. I'm actually here today with Sparefoot.com, which is a fabulous website that lets you compare the most storage options nationwide to pick the best solution for your needs, whether it's traditional self-storage or full-service storage. They have absolutely up-to-date information on all storage everywhere, and they're kind of like Hotels.com, but for storage. And so Sparefoot.com just did a wonderful study that I'm sort of analyzing and looking at on the impact of clutter on relationships, and looking at how couples look at storage and clutter and the impact that it has on them.
And your actual website, your personal website, why don't you reference that again too?
My website is www.drsusanbartel.com.
Wonderful. Thank you. Now, according to the study, 44% of millennials in a relationship currently have an item from an ex that they don't want their significant other to know that they are keeping. Now, do you think that this is sneaky or betrayal, or should they just be more open with their partners when something is that important to them?
Well, isn't that an amazing statistic, first of all?
Unbelievable.
I love that statistic, but nearly half of millennials are holding on to stuff. So I'll tell you what I really think it speaks to, and I think it's interesting. I think it speaks to the idea that they're not so sure about relationships. You know, we live in a society where relationships aren't quite as solid as they used to be many, many years ago. The divorce rate is much higher than it used to be, and I think that people are holding on to old things from old relationships because they don't yet feel secure in the relationship that they're in. And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about this earlier, that if you are in a long-term relationship, a committed long-term relationship, you should either be getting rid of those things, or if not, second best to that is you should certainly be sharing it with your partner. If you're holding on to something that has really deep sentimental value to you and you're not sharing that with your partner, I think there could be a problem in that. If you're holding on to something not because it has sentimental value, but just because, say, maybe your old partner gave you a very, very expensive watch and you're keeping it because it's a beautiful watch, then you need to be able, and you want to wear that watch, you need to be able to talk to your partner about that and say, look, it doesn't have sentimental value. But you do need to understand that for your partner, they're going to look at that watch every single time and feel threatened by it, understandably. So maybe you want to sell that watch and buy a new watch that is just as beautiful, but doesn't have that baggage that comes with it. I think if you're holding on to stuff secretly that's truly meaningful to you, you need to be looking at the relationship you're in and wonder if it is, in fact, as good as the relationship should be.
Would that lend itself to an exercise where the person who has that memento or object presents it to the new partner, to the current partner, and says, this was given to me by my ex, and it has a lot of sentimental value, but it's not questioning the love that I have for you and have an open communication as to the status of the item?
I think that that could work. I think that that's, yeah, possibly could work. You know, the other thing I think that's another layer of this, it depends on what the past relationship was. So, for example, if you're keeping a sentimental item from a former partner who died, and it wasn't a relationship that ended badly but ended, say, in death, that might be different. And your partner might understand why you want to keep that. If that person that died is, say, the parent of your children, you would want to keep those sentimental things, and it's completely understandable and acceptable. And if your partner can't understand that, then that might be a problem in the relationship.
Absolutely.
And the other thing about items is they sometimes have an energy to them, you know, that if you keep it around you, it reminds you of that time in your life, like the old teddy bear or the jewelry or the something that you got from the one that got away. So what do you think about that, the idea that items, that physical items, can also carry an energy to them that kind of brings people back to that time?
Yeah, I think that that's definitely the case. That energy could be positive or negative, though.
Yes.
You know, I think that it could be a wonderful energy, a truly inspired and positive energy that propels you to somewhere in your life that's really great. Like, we see this all the time. For example, if you had a partner who died, but there's some memory you have, and that inspires you to begin a charity or to run a race or to do something that you may never have thought of doing in your life, because those items that you're holding on to that remind you of that person are so inspirational. But you could be holding on to items of a relationship that is not inspirational. The relationship wasn't, and the items aren't, and it could be holding you back from moving forward into the next healthier place in your life. And sometimes people don't know the difference. You know, I have people who come to me for therapy who are holding on to things that, and they think that what they're holding on to is for a positive reason, but in reality, it's holding them back from something in their life that could be better, and they just don't know that yet. So I think that it can go either way, and we need to analyze it very honestly with ourselves.
I think that's really, you know, that's a great, what you're saying is so important, because people really do not often realize what it means to hold on to stuff and how it impacts them or blocks them. You know, I was just thinking in my first marriage, which was kind of brief, but involved a beautiful piece of jewelry, a couple of pieces of jewelry. There was one ring that I was buying myself. It was a beautiful diamond and sapphire ring, and I'd put a deposit on it, and my first husband surprised me and bought it for me.
Okay.
And so it became his gift to me. And I love that ring so much, and I really wanted it to be my ring. But after we got divorced, I felt like my wedding ring, which I also loved, and that ring were sort of like burning a hole in my hand. I wasn't wearing them, but I had to get rid of them. So I sold my beautiful ring because I needed to let go of that relationship for like no money. I just took it to a local jewelry store.
Yeah.
And I took my beautiful wedding ring and I tossed it into a body of water. I think it was from the Brooklyn Bridge.
Wow.
And I just, because I had to sort of give it back to the mother ocean, to the water for healing, because I knew that I just wasn't going to be able to find love if I was keeping the jewelry, because the jewelry had his energy and that energy was gone from my life.
Right.
And so
powerful.
Yeah, it was powerful. And I think that it really is. It was a grand symbolic gesture. And I think, you know, when someone does something like that, it really kind of sets you forth on a relationship path toward the relationship that you want, because you were willing to let go of something that seemed valuable to you.
Right. I agree with you completely. I think that's incredibly meaningful. The other part that's just interesting about the story you're telling, which really resonated to me, is that your first ring, your sapphire ring, you had wanted to buy for yourself.
Yes.
And that was taken away from you.
Yep.
And so that self-empowerment never really was fulfilled until you made the choice yourself to get rid of the ring. Then you finally came full circle and fulfilled that self-empowerment of doing what you wanted to do with that ring.
Thank you for saying that, because, you know, everybody thought I was out of my mind for selling it for like $100, I think.
But it was also representative of an individual that she was married to who was totally controlling, and that was one of the reasons why the marriage didn't last.
Right. He probably felt very threatened that you wanted to buy yourself a ring.
Oh, yeah. He had to take it over. There was another ring that he gave me. That he bought me. It was a miniature of Napoleon's, the crown that Napoleon gave me.
Oh,
he was so excited when he bought that ring for me. And then I gave it back to him because I saw him a year later and I gave it back to him. I said, I'm not going to throw this out. I'm giving it back to you.
Wow.
And he gave it to one of his brothers.
I just want to share that, you know, Lori Sue and I actually met when we attended an adult education seminary, the New Seminary of New York. That's how we met. So we both were on a spiritual path. And when we decided that we were going to have the relationship, we did something not necessarily involving material items, but emotional clutter, where we did a ceremony together. We went down to Sandy Hook Beach off of New Jersey. And we brought some rose petals with us, and we imbued each rose petal with whatever emotional baggage we were carrying and hurts, and also thankful to our past partners for the lessons that we learned with them. We cast them into the ocean, and it really became something that helped us to clear that energy.
You know what I just thought of?
Beautiful. beautiful ceremony.
Oh, so just something that just dawned on me after what you just said about my last ring. Remember what we did at that ceremony, what I gave you to give me?
That's right.
I bought my own engagement ring.
That's right.
And I gave it to him to give me.
That's right.
There you go. So,
and it was diamond and sapphire, but it was like a band.
He didn't feel threatened by that.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, every time there was a birthday or an anniversary or something came around, she'd say, "Honey, look what you bought me for my birthday or for our anniversary." It's just really, and that's become a pattern. And it's something that we laugh about and love about, and it's really great.
Well, you know what? I think that in general, though, that idea in relationships of being able to ask for what you need from the other person is very important. It's not just about waiting around for them to give you what you want. It's about asking for what you want. And I think that's some of what makes relationships positive, you know, very positive and strong, is being able to say to your partner, what I really want for my birthday is, you know, this pair of jeans.
Right.
And not waiting for them to buy you some item that you didn't really care about or want or need. It's about saying, I want this, I need this, this is what's going to make me happy. Some people like surprises. I think surprises could be great too, but I think there is something a little bit more evolved about being comfortable enough in a relationship to be able to say, this is what I need from you, physically and emotionally, not waiting for the other person to figure it out.
Well, I knew he wanted to marry me, so I had, like, I knew we wanted to get married, so...
Yeah.
That's what gave me the comfort level with it. But I just, it didn't even dawn on me that I really was kind of doing what I didn't get to do the first time. I bought my own ring.
It was the perfect
ring. It was the one I loved.
And you found emotional and empowerment completion in that act, and it was beautiful.
Great husband, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. All of the above. Well, you know what it was? But in psychology, we call that a corrective emotional experience.
There you go.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that great? That if you can go back and do something differently the second time around, sometimes we see that with... they say people who were abused when they were kids, they grow up and they become fabulous parents who treat their children with great respect. That's a corrective emotional experience. So you buying your own ring is a corrective emotional experience for you. Very powerful, incredibly powerful.
Now, why in relationships are men's items the first to go? 60% of men in a relationship frequently stop their significant other from throwing out an item they want to keep.
I think in general... this is really a generalization. Let me just start by saying that. I think that women care more about what's in their home than men do. I think men it doesn't bother them as much if the woman has a collection of something or a bunch of, you know, 40 pairs of shoes or, you know, whatever it is they're keeping. I think women in general, again, I'm really generalizing. I'm sure this is not the case in all relationships. Women are more annoyed and bothered by the men's collections, whether it's the baseball cards or hundreds of tools or, you know, excess number of golf clubs or whatever it is. Women are more bothered by it than men are. And so they will try sneakily to get rid of their partner's stuff. And the men have to constantly be intervening like, no, I wanted that T-shirt. I'm going to wear it again in 5 years. Don't throw that out.
Well, that could be because women are also, again, a generalization, but are often the caregivers, the caretakers of the house, the guardians of the home.
Yeah, well, that's true. And, you know, that's not always a generalization. In my home, my husband and I split everything 50%. We both cook and clean and do everything, take care of the kids. I mean, my kids are old now. They're all teenagers and young adults, but they still have plenty of needs. And we split everything. But in general, there is actually research that supports that women do more housework. So that's not just a generalization. There actually is a fair amount of research that supports that. Even when the woman works equal number of hours to the man, she still does more than 50% of the home and childcare responsibilities. So that is true, that women want things to be neater and cleaner because they're the ones taking care of it. I think that that's clearly a valid reason why women are worried more about that than men are.
So how about kids and clutter? Once a couple finally settles in and then they have their kids, how does that shake things up for savers and for purgers?
In that tech department, I will tell you, my husband and I are quite equal. He tends to be much more of a saver, and I'm really a purger. But in that particular department, I have to admit to having an attic full of my kids' baby clothes. My oldest is 22, let me tell you. Baby clothes and art projects from nursery school and books.
Yeah. Oh, I have those too. I'm glad I'm not alone. Mine's 24.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think parents, you know, it goes back to that idea of the two main reasons people hold on to things. One is because of the memories from the past, and the other is because you might need it in the future. And this is really a great example of parents holding on to something that brings back such warm, beautiful memories for them, and that they might one day think their children will want. Like maybe when when my kids were babies, I had some clothing that was my, and books also, that were my husband's. My mother-in-law is an enormous saver, enormous. And she actually gave me some knitted clothing and books from when my husband was a little boy that I used with my children. So there is something, I guess, to be said for holding on, but probably a lot of what I have in my attic, my kids will never use with their kids. And I'll have to eventually get rid of it and purge it. But the other thing that's interesting about holding on to stuff is the Sparefoot research showed that parents could throw out their children's things and the children wouldn't even notice it was gone. Toys. They could throw out their kids' toys and the kids wouldn't even notice. So what does that tell us about how much stuff our kids have?
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd notice their favorite animal or doll or blankie, but just general toys laying around, they just don't even know.
That they wouldn't even know, that they can throw out, you know, anything of their kids, except maybe that favorite blankie or toy, and the kids wouldn't notice it was gone. And I have actually seen that with patients. I see that quite often. If I'm working with a parent, say, on some discipline techniques, and we say, you know, that you have to take away their ex for a day, you know, to deal with whatever that was. And the kids, for the first 3 days, let's say they've taken it away for a week. Often it's electronics, but sometimes it's toys. Take it away for a week. The first 2 or 3 days, the kid might ask for it. Then the kid will forget about it and move on to something else. Because most kids have so much clutter. The kids themselves have so much clutter of material goods in our society that they really don't notice when their things are gone.
How about adults? Are there numbers on whether, like, does the guy notice when the wife gets rid of stuff sometimes? Are there times when things are gotten rid of and nobody notices?
Yes, there are definitely times when things are gotten rid of and nobody notices. And, you know, those are kind of okay times. But in reality, I think that it's not healthy in the relationship, you know, to do that. I think if we're going to, again, go to that deeper level, even if the person doesn't notice that you got rid of it, you're holding on to the secret that you got rid of it. So now you have a secret in the relationship, albeit not a major, say, like a financial secret or an affair or something like that. But certainly you're holding on to a secret, and it's not healthy for relationships to have any kind of secrets. And you've also done something, and so you're inherently keeping that secret, that you know your partner didn't want you to do. When you throw out something that belongs to your partner, even if they don't know that you threw it out, it is symbolic of something less than healthy in the relationship. First of all, you're holding on to the secret of what you threw out, and you know it's something that they didn't want thrown out. And so now you're carrying a secret, which may not be as bad as a secret about finances or an affair, but it's still a secret. And you're not giving your partner the opportunity to discuss what is bothering you. So it's much better to have an argument even or a blowout or a big discussion about why you are upset about the thing that they're holding on to, rather than doing it secretly, even if you're not going to get caught, even if you think it's something you can do without being caught. It's not good for the relationship. It's symbolic of a secret and of an avoidance of discussion about an important conversation about how you are different. And that's what helps our relationships to grow, is when we discuss things that are hard for the relationship.
Now, you have a recipe for basic help with clutter quarrels. Can you share your three important steps that every couple should take?
Yes. So really, these steps are actually kind of honing down everything we've been talking about today. So we're going to start with the first one, which is they're called the three C's of clutter. The first one is care. You need to be able to spend time with your partner discussing what clutter or not liking clutter means to each of you. So, for example, let's go back to that example of the man who wanted to hold on to his childhood comic books. For him, having the conversation with his partner and explaining to her what that means to him, why he wants to go back to his childhood and have those comic books in the back of his closet, what it means to hold on to things. I've had couples in my office who tell me that when they were kids, their mom just chucked everything out, constantly threw their things out, things that had value to them that the mom didn't find valuable because they were kid things. But what that left the person with was this deep hole of feeling invalidated by a parent, that what was important to you was thrown out. And so in this relationship, they don't want that to happen. And so this give and take conversation of what clutter or not having clutter, you know, sometimes it's the opposite. Someone could have grown up in a home with a parent who was a hoarder. And so that clutter makes them extremely anxious. But the more you discuss what it means, the more you're able to have empathy for the other person's perspective. So that's number one. Number two is compromise. Now, compromise, we all know, of course, is the hallmark of any good relationship across the board. When it comes to clutter, compromise is extremely important because we want to be able to try and come to a middle ground where the saver feels good about what they're able to save, but the purger doesn't have to feel that anxious feeling of having too much stuff in the house. So sometimes that's when you want to rent a storage facility to keep some of the stuff like we talked about before about the clothing. You know, if you're feeling like you have clothes you just don't want to throw out. Or if you have a huge collection of baseball cards, maybe you put that in a storage facility. Or you just decide you're going to keep 1 week's worth of magazines instead of 6 months' worth of magazines. Compromise. It's incredibly important for the relationship to compromise. And then the final C of the three C's is communication, where you have to work together to discuss what's most important. Of course, compromise would be the sort of ultimate result, but compromise isn't always the only way that things can and will go. And the more you communicate and talk, the more you will come to a place where you can sort of deal with your clutter that makes both people comfortable. In some cases, it might mean that the purger has to tolerate the clutter because you might decide after communicating, you know, over the course of weeks, let's say, or sometimes I do this with people in therapy, that it's more important for one person to hold on to their things than for the other person to get rid of them. And that might just be an emotional reason. And sometimes you have to give the other person what they want. And again, in all relationships, it's give and take. Sometimes we end up with a compromise, but sometimes we need to give to the other person what they need. And at another time in the relationship, they give us what we need. So these three C's, I think if you apply them not only to clutter, but to every aspect of your relationship, you'll probably find them pretty beneficial.
Absolutely. You know, Lori Sue and I both, I work out of an office and I travel a lot for work, and but we both have home offices, and Lori Sue obviously has a major home office because she does a lot of her work from home. And we bought a tool that helps us to declutter our home. It's called a shredder. And what we've come to realize is that if a piece of paper has been sitting in a file folder for any length of time that we haven't looked at it, and usually it's more than 6 months, sometimes it's a year. If it's a legal document, obviously it has to be maintained longer. But we have had this little process where we shred together. And you know what they say, the couple that shreds together goes to bed together. That's what I want to share with our listeners right now.
I love that. I think that's great.
It's hot, shredding. It's new. It's the new hot. You know, you were talking about compromise, my mind kept flashing to that scene in when Harry Loves Sally, Carrie Fisher, I can't remember the other actor's name, Carrie Fisher is moving in, I think, with his best friend, and he's got this, like, this table that's some sort of, you know, wheel from a ship or something. It's like a big glass and wooden thing. And, you know, they're standing there trying to figure out where it's going to go. And Carrie Fisher doesn't really want it in the apartment that they're taking together. And the guy really says it's important. But when it comes to it, you see the two guys carrying the piece of furniture out of the house.
Yes. Yes, there you go. So that wasn't compromised so much, right? That was one person getting their needs met. He must have decided that it wasn't worth it to him.
Right. Happy wife, happy life.
Right, exactly. But yes, that's right. I remember that scene. That was actually quite hilarious.
Now, with reference to Sparefoot.com and the study that you've been involved with them and their work, in terms of storage and storage facilities, is out of sight truly out of mind?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think that it depends on the person and depends on what you're storing. If you're storing something that you need to get access to, like this example I gave you of this patient I had who had the clothing that she needed to keep but couldn't in her little apartment, she's been going back to her storage facility all the time and pulling out an item or two and trying it on and see if it fits her yet. So it's not out of mind at all. Sometimes it's not out of mind because you're storing family heirlooms that you may not have space for right now in your home. But you will at some point, you know that you will when your kids are grown and you have more space to put things and you know you're going to get those things. Some people I know store things and then forget about them. I've known lots of people, and there are TV shows pretty much built around this idea, right, that people forget about the stuff they have in storage. But basically, I think it depends on what you're storing and the type of person you are. But in general, the idea of storage, you know, I think in the idea of it in general is that you can use it as a tool. And if you think of it as a tool to help you sort of overcome relationship clutter, it can be very useful, and it doesn't have to be out of sight, out of mind.
And it helps you overcome personal clutter. It helps you,
yeah.
You know, it's really helpful for relationships. But I remember when I got my first storage unit, I really stored stuff that was a lot of my writing, like boxes and boxes. And it's funny how you do go back to that stuff over time.
Right.
And it had to do with career, but it also had to do with content that I wasn't ready to let go of. Since then, I've let go of a lot of it. But
right.
And also diaries.
Yeah.
Right? You can keep your journals in there.
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes I think people use storage, which is another, and it's sort of connected to what you just said. If you are not emotionally ready to get rid of something, even if you think you might in the future, there is nothing, you know, there's that balance. Some people can purge themselves immediately of, say, past relationships, and they can just throw everything out, you know, be done with it and move on. But for some people, it can take much longer to end a relationship emotionally, so that keeping something in storage allows you to be in that place of working through your emotions before you're truly ready to make the final break. And it's a lot easier. It's sort of like therapy in a way, you know. Therapy is like a process that you come out of the other end feeling stronger and more able to purge yourself of the emotional clutter that you had. And storage is a way of doing that physically.
Right. And then by the same token, when you put things away, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. You have room for new stuff.
Yeah.
So you can put more inspiring, fun stuff around you, things that represent where you're going in life, right? Where
Correct.
You want to go.
Yes. I'm always constantly, anytime my husband and I go antiquing, I'm always on the verge of saying I'm going to rent a storage facility to put the stuff that I buy in, you know, that it's in my house now so I can put the new stuff into my house.
Yep. God loves storage. So it's wedding season, and of course not all newlyweds are actually moving in for the first time together, but when people get married or they decide to be committed to each other, they build a home together. So what are some of the common relationship issues they should be aware of as they're blending their lives, as they're getting their first place together?
Oh, it's a great question. You know, it's important, I think, before you move in with somebody to really have conversations. And again, this is another example of how clutter and the idea of clutter is so symbolic of relationships in general. Talk about what your things mean to you, what the other person's things mean to them. Really think about what, if you each have a couch, why you, aside from, say, you know, which one fits in the apartment better, what is imbued in that couch for each of you? And can you compromise? Maybe both couches will fit. Maybe it'll be a kind of a cool eclectic look. Or does one of you have to say goodbye to your couch? And then what do you do with that couch? Do you give it to someone else who could benefit from it, another friend? You need to talk about closet space. You know, how are you going to fit everyone's stuff in the closet? What kind of things you're going to keep in the kitchen and on counters? And look at where each of you is living now. Where you're living now before you blend your environment is a pretty good example of what you're going to be like as a person when you do blend your environment. Again, I think that's similar to relationships. Look at the person and see what they're like now. If the person you're dating or engaged to is someone who has qualities that you don't like, those aren't going to magically change when you get married. That is the case for clutter, too. They're not going to magically become a neat person. So those are conversations you need to have before you move in together.
Absolutely. And as we always say, when Lori Sue and I officiate for couples as part of their vows, we always say openly and honestly communicate with each other as a key to long-term happiness.
100%.
Absolutely.
And love me and love my clutter.
Love me.
I'll allow your pile to get 2 feet high, but once it gets 4 feet high, you must correct that.
Dr. Susan, where can people find this study that was commissioned by Sparefoot.com and your involvement with it?
So they can find it on the Sparefoot.com website. They have it right there on the website, on their blog. It's actually a very, you can even sign up for a newsletter that they have, and they'll send you very cool articles. And I just saw the study in the newsletter recently, but certainly right on the website. It's Sparefoot, Sparefoot.com.
Wonderful. And please tell our listeners one more time where they can find out more about you and your books and all the wonderful work that you do.
Yep. They can find me at drsusanbartell.com. It's drsusanbartell.com.
And thank you for joining us. This has been a fabulous conversation.
Really fun. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom and insights and this great study.
My pleasure. It was great being with you guys.
And sage advice for every couple, because I don't think there's any couple who is completely free of some form of clutter. We all have stuff. And
we all have stuff.
And perhaps this show is a reminder that it's time to look at your stuff. And in feng shui, we say, make room for the qi to flow smoothly in your home, your life, in your relationship, and in your love. And on that note, I'm Victor the Voice Furman.
And I'm the romance reverend, Lori Sue Brockway.
And we are Love and Romance Radio. Thanks for joining us, everyone. See you next week.
Thank you.